Welcome to What's Ailing the World. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons, nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect the criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve, and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, who suppress the natural solutions to all of these problems already available, who are stealing and torturing our children under the guise of child protection. The ability to see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these predators down. The critical first step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as if we have been lied to about everything. I encourage you, getting some feedback here, I encourage you to go to my websites, reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com and drcarly.com, and check out especially the diagrams. The first diagram is called The Big Picture. It's getting massive, massive feedback. I encourage all of you to go to my websites, drcarly.com and reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com, and check out the diagrams. The first one is The Big Picture, which is the cause of all disease. You can listen to the lecture on YouTube posted below that, and I strongly encourage you to do that, to learn what's killing you and basically what you need to do to keep your health. And also remember that compromise and negotiation with evil is impossible. If you think my work is important, please tell others about this show. You can support this work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites, or you can get a consult for yourself or your family member in order to learn how to restore your health. Of course, I don't practice medicine. I don't give medical advice. I teach you what I would do if I was you. To learn how I do consults, click on the Services tab on my reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com site. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week, or toll-free from the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean at 888-321-6751. If you get a strange message that my number's been disconnected or whatever, please have the operator dial it for you. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in at 785-336-5190, or you can Skype in your questions or come on the air by Skyping PM Walk in Turtle. That's PM Walk in Turtle. Very important, callers need to mute their phones while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference with whoever's speaking. Please wait until the second hour to call in so I have an opportunity to introduce the topic of the week. And, of course, as I always say, if you don't have colloidal silver available to yourself, you really need to check this out. I've now got a hold of a document that actually proves that the government has weaponized rabies. Over $500,000 given in research grants to the Wistar Institute to develop a vaccine for weaponized rabies. And, of course, if they hadn't had it already created, they can't have a vaccine for it, which, of course, the vaccine is going to be how they spread it. On today's show, the answer to what's ailing the world is constitutional-induced slavery, democracy equal Jewish rule, with one of my favorite guests, J.B. Campbell. And let me just properly introduce J.B., who is also called Bruce. He was born in Chicago in 1946, grew up in Oak Brook, Illinois, then the polo capital of the world, graduated from Carmel High School in California, raced cars in Australia and England for 2 years, 3 years of college, mostly at the University of Nevada in Reno, operated the School of Slide Control to train racing drivers and others the technique of slide control. Commercial oil field diver in Texas and Louisiana for 2 years. He was in the British South Africa Police in Rhodesia in the early 70s and was a section officer in the support unit, the anti-terrorist group. He was the first American in this South Africa Police in Rhodesia since 1923. This is the most important thing. He started the modern-day militia movement in 1989 with his book, The New American Man, A Call to Arms. The militia movement lasted until 1995 with the state-sponsored destruction of the Oklahoma Federal Building. The State Department considers him a mercenary. The FBI considers him a problem. The Secret Service considers him a terrorist, and he couldn't care less. Of course, I'm sure they're more afraid of him than he will ever be of them. He makes his living as a drilling supervisor, mainly in Southern California. His blog is jbcampbellextremismonline.com, and he wrote an excellent document in honor of our show today, and I encourage all of you to go to his blog to read this document, This Means War. And let me say that I have declared this the Anti-Psychopath Weekend. I interviewed John Kaminsky yesterday on my show. You can listen to that archive by going to thelightofdayradioshow.com. And we covered very many of the same things we're going to cover today to try to drill it home to you folks that the enemy has been identified, and it's really important for us to do what we have to do. And I just want to mention, Bruce, that it's really funny. Dick Tracy, I happen to see something. I watch television while I'm working on my computer just to see what they're feeding the sheep. And Dick Tracy, his main message in his comic books was crime doesn't pay. Of course, it does pay if you're a Jew. And it's really not funny how that works out. And before I bring on, I just got to mention a couple of things because you can't make this stuff up. An article in the paper yesterday, CharlotteObserver.com, Justice won't prosecute Holder for contempt. So basically, we have the Congress holding Eric Holder, our totally corrupt attorney general, not only in civil contempt as well as criminal contempt, but after this happens, the Justice Department declared Friday that his decision to withhold information about their, you know, Fast and Furious organization and manipulation and, you know, everything else they've done in regards to allowing guns to be used by others so that they can use that as an excuse to crack down on guns. The Justice Department has announced that it's not going to prosecute its leader. Isn't that amazing? Any comments, Bruce?
Well, you know, everything these guys do is is more outrageous than the last thing they did. So I guess we can't expect them to prosecute the boss for any reason.
But I bring it up because we know that this just proves. I mean, obviously Congress knew this was going to happen, not to mention the fact that Obama, you know, used his executive privilege to say, no, they don't have to release documents to prove how corrupt we really are. So Congress, this whole, all these hearings they had and everything, it was nothing but a dog and pony show. You know, look over there. Look over there. And this is what they always do. None of their hearings ever result in anything actually happening to fix the problems. And so that's the main point I wanted to bring up. We also have in the paper today that the justices, you know, these criminals in black robes on the Supreme Court, have struck down in a 6-3 ruling the Stolen Valor Act of 2005, which declared it a federal misdemeanor to falsely present oneself as a decorated military officer. So in other words, it's okay to lie about you being, you know, in the service and having all these decorations for killing people, et cetera, et cetera. It's okay. The Supreme Court has actually, you know, made this their decision. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, you gotta make it safe for these Jews who lie about being in Auschwitz and somehow miraculously escaping. So they tell one whopper after another, so now it's pretty much got to be constitutional. You know, virtually everything is constitutional. That's the whole problem, because the Constitution made this problem. They created the Supreme Court, created the presidency, created all this garbage that we didn't have before the Constitution. So that's the basic problem, as I wrote in this latest piece. The Constitution is our problem. It's not the solution to anything. And that's where Ron Paul was so out to lunch, saying he wanted to stick to the Constitution. Well, look, the Constitution is a seven-part program on how to run a central federal government, a monster government. That's all it is. It created the monster. And some good people back in those days said, well, what about our rights? How are we going to protect our rights from this monster? Oh, don't worry about that, the Federalists said. And, you know, Alexander Hamilton, George Washington, and all these guys, don't worry about that. Trust us. No, we can't trust you. We have to have some rights, you know. They didn't need the rights under the Articles of Confederation. There was no need for such a thing because there was no strong central government that would take away our rights. But once these guys in secret in Philadelphia created the Constitution and gave us an imperial presidency and a Senate and a House of Representatives and a Supreme Court, man, we had a problem. Well, how do we protect ourselves from these guys in whom we are investing so much power? Well, we need a Bill of Rights. Okay, fine. So it took 4 years to get this Bill of Rights to protect us from the Constitution. So people have to understand that these two things are antithetical. They're in opposition to each other. The Supreme Court always decides in favor of the Constitution. And we have to beg them to decide in favor of the Bill of Rights. It's always a terrible struggle because the Supreme Court, you know, is constitutional. It's part of the Constitution. It's not part of the Bill of Rights. There's no Supreme Court in the Bill of Rights. So it's a fundamental conflict that we have to grasp. And I say we have to overthrow the whole system. The Constitution is the problem.
Exactly.
If you support the Constitution, that means you haven't read it.
Exactly. And I just have to encourage everyone to please go on his blog. You have to read this document. It's so important. And that's J.B. Campbell, extremismonline.com, the latest one released yesterday, This Means War. Because one of the most important things you say in this document, which I want to like scream from the rooftops, thanks to the Constitution, everything the government does is constitutional, according to the Supreme Court. So now we have this latest ridiculous decision that we can be forced to buy health insurance. Well, guess what, folks? That's going to keep you in the big pharma box so they can kill you, because nothing natural is covered by this insurance. Not to mention the fact that I know there's going to be all kinds of, you know, qualifying mandates that you have to get vaccinated to keep your insurance. If you're a woman, you have to get your breast radiated so you get breast cancer with mammograms if you want to keep your insurance. That's the next thing that's going to drop. I know it is. And, of course, they've got I forget how many thousands of IRS people they're going to hire to go after anyone who has the audacity to say, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, until last week, we really didn't understand the relationship between the IRS and the insurance industry. Now it's becoming clear. You know, all kinds of things were revealed with this crazy Supreme Court decision. But anyway, I think government health care, quote unquote, is the most crucial item to these, as you call them, the psychopaths. They want us in this government medicine that is guaranteed to destroy us. So I think that's the whole purpose of this Obamacare and Romney care. It's all the same thing. And how can we have a guy opposing Obamacare who actually wrote the thing for Massachusetts? And
I know. That's the biggest scam going. I mean, it cracks me up that anybody would believe that Romney's going to, you know, do what he says and he's going to repeal Obamacare when he's the one that actually drafted the initial plan and brought it forth in Massachusetts. It just goes to show, Bruce, how brain dead people are. I mean, they just can't even use common sense. They want to, you know, a hero. They want a leader. They want somebody to get us out of this debacle that's called the United States government. And they believe all these lies. Look at Obama. You know, all the things he promised. The most, transparent government ever. And now he's using executive privilege to not release documents to prove the corruption and fraud involved in the Department of Justice, the very department that's supposed to ensure justice. You know, you can't make this stuff up. It's like the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, this skinny crackhead, every Tuesday or every other Tuesday, he pours over the list of CIA murder victims that he wants killed in the coming week, and he picks personally the victims of these drone attacks with Hellfire missiles. You know, this skinny crackhead from God knows where. We don't even know where he's from. He's a mystery man created by the CIA. And this creep is killing people. And, of course, the collateral damage that they love to talk about is enormous. I mean, to go after some guy with a Hellfire missile, well, this, you know, these things are devastating. There's civilians around them. Who cares? Wipe them out. They don't belong there. If they're near him, they're guilty. They deserve to die. That's the kind of government we have, is some crackhead from Chicago picking victims with the most cowardly weapon in the history of mankind, a drone. And that's what we're faced with now in our homes. We've got drones authorized to be used against us nationwide for any reason, for no reason at all.
Yes, and of course, if they start using drones to take out people like you and me, you know, of course, that's not going to be reported on the mainstream media. They're already letting it out into the mainstream media that they're using drones to basically spy on people, that many police departments are buying these drones up. We also know that they have them as small as bumblebees. And I got lots of bumblebees that follow me around, and I laugh and say hello to them just in case, you know, they're actually drones. But, you know, this is basically what's going on. And as you state in your excellent document, I don't know if I can find the exact quote here, but basically that what they're doing, we have a bunch of people, you know, sitting someplace. I think you mentioned in Nevada. I didn't know where these drone activators were located, but that they're sitting there, and it's like they're playing some kind of a video game. And just basically, you know, watching on their screens and sending their drones out to do whatever, you know, the traitor-in-chief has commanded them to do. And this should be outraging Americans. I mean, let's pretend that there were terrorists that were not within the government. I mean, what more could you do to piss somebody off than to send drones to their country to kill people, as you said, with all kinds of collateral damage? If we're the country of the rule of law, how come we're not capturing these people and charging them with whatever crime we allege they've committed? Since when does the American president have the authority to be the judge, jury, and executioner? I mean, how can American citizens sit down and take this? I don't get it.
You know, my wife and I lived in Reno, in Las Vegas for a few years in the early 2000 area, 2003, 2004, 2002, actually, 2004. And we kept our horses at a stable north of town. And the Air Force rodeo team was at this stable also. They had a rodeo arena. And one of the wives of one of these guys was this Jewish gal who was always wearing camouflage when she'd show up at the stables. So finally I said to her one day, I said, "What do you do?" Oh, she said, "I'm at Nellis Air Force Base." Yeah. What do you do there? Well, I'm a predator operator. Predator. What is a predator? She said, well, that's, you know, the remotely piloted vehicles, RPVs. Oh, you mean, predators. They carry Hellfire missiles, don't they? This is back in 2003, you know.
So they've been doing this for a decade, and we're just now hearing about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I said, how do you do that? How do you fly them? Well, we fly them here. You know, we operate them from here. I said, against Iraq? Yeah. She said, we operate them here. I mean, you drop the Hellfire missiles from here on Iraq? She says, yeah. My God. So that was quite a revelation. The Predator base is a Creech Air Force base. It used to be called Indian Dunes, a little ways north of Las Vegas. But they're operated right out of Nellis. And I guess there are other bases of operation now, you know, in Florida and elsewhere. But that's where it started, in Las Vegas. And they're still operated out of there.
And you can only imagine the collateral damage in terms of the U.S. military that must be occurring also, as they're, you know, troops on the ground, and then all of a sudden they see one of these drones coming and dropping Hellfire missiles. I don't think they're going to have a lot of time to get out of the way, you know, and I'm sure that they're not warned about these strikes before they happen. So that's very concerning as well.
Yeah, so my position is that drone operators need to be killed. They are war criminals of the worst type, the most cowardly types of, you know, sitting in Las Vegas, dropping Hellfire missiles on people halfway around the world. This is beyond comprehension, you know, how this can happen. At least the pilots, and I consider bomber pilots to be the worst sorts of war criminals, dropping explosives on people from altitude. You know, this is a cowardly thing, number one, but at least they're in harm's way. You know, they can be shot down. But these jerks in Las Vegas, they just sit there in air-conditioned offices, twiddling their joysticks, having a great time, go out and have a drink, and then back to work. So they need to be shot. They're un-American. They're just anti-human. And another thing is these chemtrail planes.
Yes.
Anybody who flies a chemtrail plane needs to be shot. And I sound like some character in an old movie, but what else are you going to do? They're poisoning us with these chemtrails, just the same as these drone operators are killing people with Hellfires. I mean, it's all the same thing. And what is our defense against these people? Could we vote them out of power? No. Well, we can't vote them out. We can't ask them to quit. They are waging war against us. That's why I call this latest piece, This Means War. They're waging a vicious genocidal war against us and people around the world. They have to be stopped. They have to be stopped. We got to jack up our ideas. We got to realize we're next. And these people represent the most dreadful threats to humanity. They have to be stopped. They have to be shot. There's no nice way to do it. You can't sue them. You can't court-martial them. You can't. They're following orders. So what do you do? They've left us no choice. As Jack Kennedy said, take away peaceful means. You know, all you got left is violent means. And that's where we are now.
Well, it's not even a matter that we're next. We are being killed. And let me also mention, it's not just the chemtrails. As I sent you that document that proves that they've developed weaponized rabies, and it's self-evident to me that this is what's causing this epidemic of cannibalism, because rabies is the virus that does things to the brain that creates that result. They're dropping live rabies virus on the population as well. As a matter of fact, I have a document from the Pennsylvania Department of Health talking about the oral rabies vaccination in Pennsylvania, and it actually states in here that since 1990, more than 100 million doses of this live rabies vaccine has been dropped on the United States. And it's not only rabies, it's got a version of smallpox in it as well. So, yes, they are killing us. And this is one of the big problems that we have. What are we to do? Because as you also state in your amazing document, we have so many that are, you know, getting behind the Jews, especially the Christians. You actually state in here on page 3, Christianity makes the world safe for Jews, which, of course, the Jews are actually killing the Christians as well. It's really amazing the psyops that has been accomplished in order to allow these psychopaths to continue to do what they're doing. And the only criticism I've ever heard back from listeners when you've been a guest on my show is that you say, you know, what you just said, that we have to go on the offense because, you know, basically they're already killing us. So what are we to do? And you state at the end of your document that the defense is simple, fight back, start patrolling your neighborhood and be prepared to shoot anyone who is readying an attack. You have the natural right to kill anyone who threatens you. And, you know, people have a problem with this. I myself, I'm very off in the country, and they send slave work units, you know, to walk by my house all the time. I know I'm being monitored. I could care less. And I'm not going to go out with a gun and start shooting these people. But if they break down my door, you know, that's another issue. But the problem people have in general is going on the offense out in public. So how do we talk about that? Because I know that in your line of work, you're traveling a lot. And what do you do? I'm sure that you have, you know, the concealed carry permit and all the rest of it. What would it take for you to stop your vehicle and say, okay, now it's a showdown? What would it take?
Well, first of all, you know, billions of dollars have been spent by Hollywood, by the government, to produce this attitude. Oh, well, that sounds a little radical to me. You know, what right do you have to say these things? You realize in the movies, the only people who carry guns are cops, criminals, and soldiers. In the movies, the main character, whether it's a male or female, never carries a gun. You know, if he or she is a civilian. A gun is never used in the movies to defend oneself unless you're a secret agent, you know, or a cop. So that's the relationship that Hollywood and government have. They don't. If we had movies, for example, that had regular people carrying guns and defending themselves, then everything would change. But Hollywood has helped us. This mindset. Now, personally, I don't have a concealed license. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in asking for anything. You know, I'm not going to pay $150 to state of Idaho for a license. I don't need a license. I don't need any stinking badges. I am expecting that these days, you know, now that the TSA is supposedly running roadblocks on the interstates and I suppose cops are doing the same thing locally. I expect to, you know, I drive back and forth constantly. So I'm expecting this trouble, and I'm totally prepared for it. You know, that could be it could happen any time. So it hasn't happened. I've just been told by our local guys here that we have an RFID reader for our Idaho license plates. I didn't know that Idaho license plates had RFID in them, but apparently there's a reader down the road from where we live, and you go back and forth, you know, and it knows that you're on the road. So these readers apparently are all over the place. So they can kind of, but I mean, I don't care. If they want to fight, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. I'm always ready at the drop of a hat, and I think they realize that. I mean, you see what happened at Waco, a bunch of kind of eccentric people who happen to have a lot of guns didn't like the raid by these bat fags, you know, Bureau Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearm agents, call them bat fags. They attacked this church thinking they had a walkover. because they expected these people to be in prayer at 10 o'clock in the morning. They were told by the informant they would be in prayer, so that's a good time to hit them. Unfortunately for the bat fags, they were not in prayer. They were ready, and they had guns, and they fired back, and they killed four people and wounded I don't know how many, to the extent that the bat fags raised their hands and asked for a surrender so they could come get their dead and wounded. The only mistake the people in Waco made was letting them do that. If they'd known what was in store for them 51 days later, I seriously doubt that they would have allowed them to come in there and get their dead and wounded. They'd have kept shooting. They might as well have, the way things turned out. But that debacle in Waco changed everything. You know, I'm not a Christian. I don't believe in any of that nonsense. But I must say, those people, they made our lives much more valuable. They showed the government what we're capable of. Even a bunch of eccentric believers were able to do this. My God, you know, they know what could happen in this country when people finally say, the hell with you. You know, you want my gun? Let's just come and get it.
Right.
See how much you like that. They don't like that. They're afraid. They're very much afraid. So I'm ready. I don't give a damn, you know. I'm 65 years old. I really don't give a damn. And they know it. They've known it for a long time. I don't care. Let's do it. Anytime. And anybody who says, well, that's radical talk. You shouldn't be saying that. Well, the hell with you. You know, if you're a coward, be a coward. If you're an American, and I don't think much of Americans. I'll tell you this, like I said in my piece. I don't like this country. I don't like what America has done to the world. I don't like what America, I don't like the way it was founded. I don't like the way the Constitution was created. It was all deception. It was all lies and trickery and banker deceit. It was all done to get those Rothschild bankers paid back for war loans. That's why we got stuck with the Constitution and a federal government. That's the only reason. You can't have a central bank without a central government to back it up, and that's what we got. So I don't like anything about this. I don't like the Civil War. I don't like World War I. I don't like the Philippine War. I don't like World War II. I don't think it's much of a country. It's got high technology and low morality. So we need some changes. We need some radical changes. And it can only be done through violent revolution. You know, we became a country through violent revolution. That's what people don't like to talk about. Oh, well, that was then. You know, this is now. We're much more civilized. Are we really? I don't think we're very civilized at all. I don't think we have any morality. You got to have civilization, you have to have morality. We have no morality. What's our morality? Our religion? Read the Old Testament. Read the New Testament. You want morality? There's no morality in there. It's vicious Jewish lies and deception that justifies genocide. I mean, look at the Old Testament. That's what these stupid Christians are based on, is the Old Testament. Oh, they say, we don't read the Old Testament. That's for the Jews. Yeah, but it's all based on the Old Testament. Even Jesus is based on the Old Testament. You know? Anyway.
Right. I just want to comment on what you said in terms of having a weapon. One of the things I find pretty interesting is that now that they've released this weaponized rabies and we're having more and more incidents of cannibalism, the latest story, by the way, I heard of was a case in Waco, Texas. Waco being an interesting place you were just talking about, that a man strangled his own dog and then proceeded to eat his dog. So, you know, the stories about these cannibalistic occurrences are coming into the news now. And, of course, this is going to spread fear as well. And eventually they're going to have to admit that this is due to rabies. They did come out and say that the Miami cannibal did not have the bath salts in him that they had, you know, blamed for his behavior. Obviously, you know, this is not a drug-induced state. It's a rabies-induced state. But the point is that it's really amazing how it's coming out now that the military and the police are actually now having exercises where they're, you know, planning for a zombie apocalypse. And they've got special bullets and special guns and even special knives that they have created to kill zombies, which of course are not zombies. They're not the undead. They are actually cannibals. So I think that, you know, people can use that to their advantage and say, yeah, I have a weapon because I'm preparing myself to kill any zombie that may come out, you know, and threaten me when I'm out in public. So I totally agree with you. Why would you have to get permission to have a license for a firearm? Because basically you're just letting them know that you have a firearm so they can come and take it. And so that's what I'm going for, is the threat of the cannibals that they have created and that we have to be able to protect ourselves from them.
Yeah, I mean, if you get stopped, they know that you got a license to carry. So, oh, they can use that. They say, oh, Jesus, he's packing heat. We gotta get him. You know, he's a dangerous guy. I mean, that's a ridiculous concept, this concealed weapon thing. It may make a person feel good, you know, having one with the permission of the state, but I don't need that. I don't require that. Now, the zombies that I'm concerned about are wearing camouflage. These are real zombies, and they got guns, and they got khaki uniforms or whatever the cops have. You know, they're zombies too. Mm-hmm. So I'm concerned about the ones with the authority to kill us. You know, I realize you got this new phenomenon that you're describing of crazy people. But the real concern are the zombies wearing uniforms, because they are zombies.
Right.
They have no morality.
They're automatons. They will do whatever they're ordered to do, and I totally agree with you. As a matter of fact, this whole concealed weapon thing, basically what you're doing is you're unconcealing your weapon status, and you're telling your enemy that you have a weapon. Because, you know, this whole concept of the terrorists, you know, anybody in the know, and I know the listeners to my show and your readers, they know who the terrorists are. And they are, as you said, the military and the police. And so basically, those people are the enemy. And once you wrap your head around that and realize that we're a danger every place we go, like you said, you know, the checkpoints, it's always amazing to me. They'll have in the paper on Sunday, you know, they'll tell, today it said 141 people were caught in DWI checkpoints. Are they really having these checkpoints to protect the citizens? I don't think so. As a matter of fact, they put up these checkpoints near bars where they know people are going to go to bars on Saturday night. And so basically all they have to do is just stop people coming out of the bars. How many people are they going to hook? How do you even know that their breathalyzers even tell the accurate amount of blood alcohol? They can make up anything they want. If they want you, they got you.
Yeah, I was on a jury one time. It was a good story, but on the second jury I was on was a guy that got stopped, and he refused to take a test. So I was going to, you know, there's no evidence against it because he didn't take the test. Now, in California, you know, that's automatic. Well, I guess every place, if you refuse to take the test, automatic lose your license. But at least you don't have a DUI. So I was going to find the guy not guilty because there was no evidence, but his lawyer didn't have the courage to try that. He made a plea bargain. So I went to see him a couple days later. I said, hey, I was on that jury with your guy, you know. Oh, you know, oh yeah, I remember you. I said, how come you threw in the towel? We were going to find him not guilty. Oh, really? He said, well, I didn't know that. You know, I kind of thought you were going to hammer him. No, I said, I mean, he didn't take a test. There's no evidence. Well, he said, frankly, you know, I tell all my clients, don't take the test because they've got no evidence. So you're exactly right. You're going to lose your license anyway, but at least you don't have a DUI. So I was talking to a lawyer the other day. I said, well, I mean, doesn't the Fifth Amendment, you know, protect you from having to act as a witness against yourself? Doesn't that prohibit that? Well, not in this case, no. I mean, these lawyers, they're pretty useless, I must say. They don't have the guts to go against and use the actual tools that are like in the Fifth Amendment or in the Fourth Amendment or in the Second Amendment. Now, I don't, you know, don't get me wrong. I don't believe in the Second Amendment. I don't like the Second Amendment. I started the militia because of the Second Amendment and the stupid wording, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Where do you get that? Where do they get that phrase? They call the dependent clause of that sentence. The rest of it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, that's good. But why'd they have to stick that stupid, well-regulated militia thing on the front? Because that's what destroyed the whole Second Amendment. People think, well, the Second Amendment gave us all the guns. I said, well, no, actually, no, the CIA gave us all the guns. But the judges used that clause, well-regulated militia, to take away our guns and to put us in prison. Because the judge, from 1840 right up till today, will say, sir, I don't see a relationship between this sawed-off shotgun and a well-regulated militia. So I don't recognize your right to have this shotgun under these terms. And you, sir, should go to prison. See, that's how they, that's the destructive part of the Second Amendment. And that's why I started the militia. I said, well, okay, I'm going to jam this militia right down the government's throat, which I did. They didn't expect that. They didn't see that coming. And, you know, now the militia, don't get me wrong, I'm not pushing the militia at all because it's been totally infiltrated by feds and cops. You don't want anything to do with the militia anymore.
Now you talk about the resistance, and that's on an individual basis, and I totally agree with you. As a matter of fact, just injecting that word well-regulated, well, who's regulating it? The regulators are always the government. So, you know, that's how they brought it in. Oh, it's the, I'm blanking out on the term, the force where people are serving 1 month, 1 week and a month.
The National Guard.
Right. They've transformed it into the National Guard. Well, you know, the National Guard is not the American citizenry. So these are the loopholes that they have. And as you were talking about the attorneys, you know, I realized a long time ago, the attorneys work for the government. Their first duty is to protect the courts. If there's corruption and fraud going on in the courts, they have to cover it up. So anybody that's paying an attorney, you're actually paying for you to be sold out. And this is the whole basis of all these plea bargains. Yes, get your client to plea bargain because, you know, basically then they can do whatever they want to you and they don't even have to go through the trouble of even having a trial. I wanted to bring up something else in regards to these checkpoints, a very disturbing thing that I saw happen in Florida before I moved out of Florida in 2007. They started allowing beer and wine to be served at zoos. And so what happened after that? The cops put up checkpoints right outside the zoos to stop vehicles, to check them for alcohol, because in that case, not only can they do what they do and claim that you're DWI and all the rest of it, but if you have children in the car, they take your children. So that's the level that they brought it up to at this point.
You can hear Simon and Garfunkel in the background saying, it's all happening at the zoo. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hell of a scam. I didn't realize that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything they can do to take everything we have, as you talk about in your excellent document. And one of the things that you mentioned, I haven't seen mentioned before, was that Abraham Lincoln was our first dictator. And, of course, you know, everybody, you know, worships Abraham Lincoln, although very suspiciously, there's a movie out now, Abraham Lincoln, the Vampire Hunter. I haven't seen that movie. I don't know what's up with that.
That's going to be a real winner.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe you want to explain to the listeners how Abraham Lincoln is our first dictator.
Well, again, a lawyer working for the Illinois Central Railroad, and his dream was to go to war against the southern states. He couldn't have cared less about the Africans, the African slaves. He hated them. He wanted them all shipped back to Africa, and he was part of that Back to Africa program. So he couldn't care less about slaves. He wanted to destroy the southern states. He went to the banks shortly after he was elected in 1861, I mean, he's elected in 1860 and took office in 1861, went to the banks and asked for loans so he could invade and destroy the southern states. And they said, okay, we got money for you. It'd be 34% interest rate. He said, oh, my God, I can't afford that. So he started using the greenbacks, you know, which were good things, except they were used for an evil purpose. But so anyway, his plan was not to preserve the Union, but to destroy the South. I mean, there's no question that he turned Phil Sheridan and William Tecumseh Sherman loose on those people down there. I mean, you talk about genocide and mass destruction. People, you know, we don't realize what happened in those days. What a vicious thing. But there were a lot of people in the North, such as myself, say, if I'd have been alive in those days, called Copperheads. They didn't like the idea of going to war against other Americans. The Southerners, all they wanted was to get out of this Yankee Union because, you know, they were stuck in this cotton syndrome. That's all they could do was raise cotton for the Yankee industrialists up north who wanted that cotton. They didn't care how we got it. You had to use slaves because there was no, you know, there was no mechanized way to do it in those days. It had to be picked. And so they didn't care. They wanted that cotton. So, but they didn't want the Southerners to have any benefits. They wanted to rub their noses in their Yankee superiority. So finally the Southerners said, to hell with this. We can't deal with these people. We need to have our own country. And Lincoln, you know, maneuvered them into firing the first shot at Fort Sumter after the provocations. The same, that's what Roosevelt did to the Japanese. It's the exact same thing based on what Lincoln did. And anybody in the North who objected was put in prison. You know, you talk about a dictator. He put thousands of people in prison for objecting to his war against the Southern people. Hundreds of publishers and editors were jailed. Newspapers were shut down. I mean, this is dictatorship. That's why I call him a dictator. And he should have been shot. He should have been shot a lot earlier than what he was. He deserved to be shot at the very onset of this warmongering that he was doing. But unfortunately, now the numbers have been jacked up. You know, it used to say 300,000 Yankees, 300,000 Southerners were killed. Now it turns out there was more like 800,000 people killed. New research has found that war killed 800,000 Americans. That's the kind of guy he was. He deserved to be shot. He should have been shot a long time earlier because he was not a nice guy. He was probably a Rothschild agent, maybe even a Rothschild relative, as it turns out. He may have been a Jew. But he sure acted like one, and that if he wasn't a Jew, he was an honorary Jew. And honorary Jews are just as bad as Jews. We'll see as we go along here.
Exactly. And I just have to ask you because, you know, it's really amazing. When I was in school, the one class I had a big problem with was history. I did very well in school, but I always got like C's in history because I would go to sleep. I guess something inside me knew this was all BS. But is there any president who was not either of the Rothschilds, controlled by the Rothschilds or whatever? Was there any president ever that wasn't that or a Mason or a total, you know, traitor to the whole concept of what America allegedly stands for? Because obviously, in order to get to that level, although now it's self-evident that they just pick their puppet, and it doesn't matter who the puppet is, they'll do the bidding of the Zionists. And when Congress passed that law that, you know, basically Israel controls us recently, that was kind of obvious. But is there any president that actually tried to do the right thing? Some say that JFK, you know, and there's some YouTube videos of him actually talking about the traitors in our midst or something along those lines. But was there any president that tried to do the right thing?
Well, I mean, traditionally I kind of look, the most harmless one may have been Calvin Coolidge. I'm not even sure about that. But, you know, he was not motivated by ambition and greed the way the rest of them are. And in fact, he refused to run again. He wanted no part of it. So I have to say he was probably the most honorable guy. There may have been some issues that I'm not aware of with him. But Kennedy was probably the best president, but maybe the worst individual personally. I mean, there was a Jekyll and Hyde, but he did some great things as president. You know, he took on Israel, but he took on the Federal Reserve, and apparently he was going to wind down Eisenhower's Vietnam adventure after the next election, 64. But personally, he was not a nice man. You know, he was a terrible womanizer. He had no morality whatsoever. His father had used the organized crime, the mafia and the syndicate and the mob, to get him elected through vote fraud in Chicago and West Virginia, well known now, and of course Lyndon Johnson in Texas. But he turned on the mafia as soon as he became president. He sicked his brother on them. And that was a crazy thing, you know. His father was organized crime. He was a bootlegger during the Prohibition, and he was associated with all the infamous gangsters, and he enlisted their help in saying, you'll have a boy in the White House, you get him in there. And they'd fallen for the same trick to get him into the Senate. He didn't do a thing for the mafia. Once he got to be president, he turned on him. This is unbelievable. There was a character flaw with the Kennedys. The whole family is very flawed. I think maybe John F. Kennedy Jr. had broken away from that. He seemed to be more of an honorable guy. It's right. Probably why he was killed.
Right. But,
nevertheless, I don't know. I don't know any, you know, as you say, most of them are Masons. Most of them have no morality whatsoever, so it's hard to say. I just say Coolidge is probably the least harmful, probably.
Or they sell out. I mean, what does Jackie Kennedy do after her husband is killed? She marries a Jew. What does Caroline Kennedy do? She marries a Jew. I mean, they have to know what has happened. And yet they're basically saying, okay, we'll sell out and we'll actually condone the monsters that have caused all the problems, you know, just to go along, to get along, or whatever the case may be. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Well, there are Nauvoo royalty, and they have no right to be the American royalty. I guess they're in disgrace now, pretty much. But they were created by, you know, the news media, Hollywood, and presented to us as our American royalty. Well, they're about as corrupt as the British royalty or any other royalty, you know. There's no right to be royal.
Right. And then Teddy Kennedy, who watched his brothers be assassinated for deciding to do the right thing, and then he totally turned over, you know, which is, of course, why nothing ever happened when he drove his car into whatever it was, a lake, and that woman died. And, of course, he was the big-time promoter of the healthcare situation before he died of brain cancer. And I just have to say, it's funny how it all works out, because there are natural solutions to everything, and I'm sure dying of brain cancer has got to be a pretty ugly way to go, because, you know, nonstop headaches, anybody that's had a headache knows that that's absolute torture. So I think that's kind of funny how that worked out. But obviously, he saw what happened to his brothers, so he said, okay, yeah, sign me up. I'll do whatever you want me to do. Just get me out of this little problem I had with whatever her name was, started with a K.
Mary Jo Kopechne.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll do your bidding, and he did for all those years, and now he's dead.
Yeah. Well, he had a good run, you know. Well, he lasted. He had all the girls and all the booze he could handle, so that was okay.
Right. Okay, I want to get back to your outstanding document. And listeners, please download this document, This Means War. you have to read this and share it with everybody you know. I want to get to something that you wrote on page 3. And I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs here because it's so important. What is democracy? Majority rule? One man, one vote? No. Democracy is one of those cynical words that means the exact opposite of what you think it means. Democracy means minority rule masquerading as majority rule. Democracy is a code word for Jewish rule. There are many euphemisms for Jewish rule, as we know. Social democracy, labor, socialism, communism, Bolshevism, Menshevism, Zionism, and neoconservatism. The most effective euphemism for Jewish rule is democracy. The most honest euphemism is Federal Reservism, because the Federal Reserve is the most blatant example of Jewish rule on the planet. The Federal Reserve is the single most ruthless and merciless Jewish organization in the world. And I love that. I mean, we could actually look at Federal Reservism as a religion. This idea that you can print money, and it's really funny. When I was a kid, my parents used to tell me money doesn't grow on trees. That was their excuse for, not giving me money if I wanted to buy something. And then when I realized that it does grow on trees because the Federal Reserve prints it out of thin air. And, of course, it's amazing how many people just can't wrap their heads around that, and that's why they brought in Ron Paul. Clint Richardson wrote an amazing document, 54 pages long, where he actually exposes Ron Paul as being the controlled opposition, playing the people and his constituents like a fiddle, this whole idea of auditing the Fed. And so the way I look at Ron Paul is that he's obviously the controlled opposition, and I'm sure what he's doing as he's collecting millions of dollars from his, disillusioned supporters. And, of course, this has allowed his son, also I'm sure a medical mason, to become a senator and just reap the gains that position entails. But he's also a name collector, because I'm sure that now anybody that supports Ron Paul is put on a list, and they want to know who's in the know, who knows about the Federal Reserve, who knows about various things, so that they can target those individuals with their drones or however they're going to target them. But this was such an important thing that you wrote about democracy being a code word for the Jewish rule. And now we're spreading our democracy all over the Muslim countries because the Muslims know about usury. That's why they are the enemy, because they speak out about that, and especially the leader of Iran. If you actually listen to his speeches, when he talks about the Zionists, that's what he's talking about, their usury and things of that nature. So please share with the listeners whatever you'd like to on this subject.
Well, I think I sent you some correspondence I had with one of Ron Paul's advisors, Tom Woods, the other day. He writes for Lou Rockwell, and he'd written a piece saying that he'd been accused by a reader that the Austrians is a label that they use on it for themselves. The Ron Paul people, Tom Woods, Lou Rockwell, these guys consider themselves part of the Austrian school of economics. Now the Austrians are a bunch of Jews like Ludwig von Mises, Franz Hayek, Murray Rothbard, Milton Friedman, and various guys who had this monetary theory, and money should be gold-backed and so forth. So I asked him, I said, well, actually, the guy's right. You are, because the guy accused the Austrians of being shills, shills for the bankers. And, of course, Woods, we're not shills, we don't believe in that. I said, well, the guy's right. You actually are shills for the bankers. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you believe in the lending of credit? See, the Austrians and these free market guys like Ron Paul, they believe that everything should be free, you know, free trade, free markets, as long as there are alternative choices in currencies, say. So it's okay to have the Federal Reserve issuing Federal Reserve notes as long as there's an alternative available, like gold. Well, where do you get the gold? I mean, gold is now $1,500 an ounce, say. Where do you, you know, they want to have our currency backed by gold. So I've asked them, where do you get the gold now? How do you afford to buy it? You have to buy it from the Jews who own the gold. The Rothschilds own all the gold. So how can you make our currency backed by gold? Now, I said the most important thing that you guys won't touch is what Hitler did to save Germany in 1933. He came to power over a bankrupt, starving nation. They had no gold because we stole all their gold in the 10 years following World War One. We said to them, you're guilty. You started the war. We want all your gold. And we want reparations payments for the rest of your lives. You're going to pay us for losing that war. And they did, until Hitler came along and said to the British ambassadors, there's going to be no more reparations payments. And the ambassador said, well, I shall inform my minister. Yeah, you do that. But not a thing was said after that, because they milked Germany dry. So Hitler was faced with, what do I do? And I'm the chancellor now, but the country is broke and we're starving. We've been starving for 10 years. We've been through hyperinflation. We don't have that now, but we still have nothing. What do I do? So he looked actually to Abraham Lincoln, because Lincoln issued debt-free currency when the bankers, you know, wanted 34%. He said he started the greenback deal. He issued debt-free currency, and that was, he said, you either take these or nothing. And they took them, and it worked. And they worked very well. The bankers didn't like what he did. That was a no-no. May have gotten him killed. But, you know, he served his purpose as a warmonger, but then he kind of blew it by issuing debt-free currency. Well, that's exactly what Hitler did. He issued debt-free currency starting in 1933. By 1935, like 18 months later, starving German workers were taking paid cruise vacations. There was such prosperity in such a short amount of time. So I asked this Tom Woods, well, what is your Austrian view of what this real Austrian did, this Hitler, to save Germany with debt-free currency? Well, he said, we don't talk about that. You know, we could talk about the Soviet Union. We can talk about Franklin Roosevelt. We can have endless debates on debt-free currency. But it's, I said, yeah, right. You just change the subject because you can't deal with this. This is the real world. This is how one man saved an entire country by issuing debt-free currency. And that's what we have to do here in America. We could turn this disaster around in a couple of years.
Exactly.
By doing the same thing Hitler did. But see, now, I wrote a piece a long time ago called Behind the Holocaust. It's also on my website because it's very important. I finally figured out that they had to associate debt-free currency with mass murder. That's what the Holocaust is.
Right.
It is the way to say, well, if you want debt-free currency, look where it leads.
That is so important what you just said, and I'm writing that down. Associating debt-free currency with mass murder was the whole basis of the Holocaust. Because basically, that's what they do. They try to find a way to make the good stuff into, you know, a problem. And that's like the most simple statement I've ever heard. That is profound. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. That's what the Holocaust is all about. Hitler, you know, should have gotten the Nobel Prize. He was unbelievably successful, like the world has never seen before or since, in rescuing Germany from destitution, degradation, total starvation virtually overnight. And the bankers were in a panic. You know, they said, what if the, you know, what if the world sees and examines what he did? Any country could do this. We would get no interest payments because the whole banking system is based on interest. Central banks are all privately owned. They may be state, you know, they may have some kind of facade of state control. There is no state control. It's owned by these Rothschild guys. Everyone, the Bank of France, the Bank of England, the Federal Reserve, all the central banks are privately owned. They have a license to print money. It's a mysterious thing. Somehow the government gives these private guys the license to print the money, and that we have to pay them to do this. This is where people blank out. They say, "Well, that doesn't sound
it can't
possible.
It can't be.
Yes, it is. That is why we're in such trouble, because of this crazy license given to these Jews over our money. We have to pay them to give us our own money." So Hitler said, "Well, hell with this. We don't need them. We have no gold. They got all our gold. I mean, all we can do is do what Lincoln did." And he did. And bingo. There's instant prosperity. Anyway.
Right. And let me just bring up the Bible thing, you know, because this is something I always find kind of humorous, that in the Bible it talks about Jesus. You know, that's the one time he got a little radical. He went into the temples and he was, you know, overturning the tables of the money changers and all the rest of that. And yet still, the Christians put on their, you know, mind control zombie whatever mask, and they forget about the few truths that there are in the Bible, and that is one of them, is that usury is bad. And yet, you know, they all continue to just go along to get along. It's really amazing.
Let's ask ourselves a simple question. If everybody has to pay back more than he borrows, and everybody does, where does the extra come from? It comes from inflation. That's the whole deal. You have to inflate the money supply to pay the interest to the bankers. Now, the bankers lend nothing. They call it lending credit. That's why I asked this Tom Woods, what do you think about lending of credit? Technically, it's illegal. It's fraud. You're lending, you know, credit is a nice word for nothing. That's what it means. It means nothing, credit. So you lend credit. They credit our accounts with these mysterious numbers. But we have to repay in real cash more than the imaginary amount we borrowed. That's how they get us. I don't care if it's 0.1% interest. It's going to kill us. Where do you get the extra to pay the interest?
And you can never pay it off. And let's also bring up this whole idea of fractional reserve lending, that they can make loans based on, they can take 10% of what they actually have and make loans for an additional 90%. I mean, this is all like just games. It's all monopoly money to begin with. But,
yeah,
you know,
and that fractional reserve thing, that's the Jewish part.
Okay.
That's the Jewish part, see? If the bank, you know, this is before, now today, there's no more rules because Wall Street, you know, we've seen from Merrill Lynch and Goldman Sachs how they really play this game. There's no rules at all.
Right.
But, you know, 20 years ago, back when we had savings and loans, you know, the idea was you take in deposits and you can lend out 10 times, say, what you take in. Well, that's, you know, right there. That's fraud. That's Jewish arithmetic right there. And the savings and loans didn't last long. You know, they were turned out to be CIA fronts. The CIA was using the savings and loans to do the drug deals. And, well, they collapsed. Okay, so now we got these fake banks. Now Goldman Sachs is called a bank. It used to be a Wall Street, brokerage. Now it's a bank. How the hell does that work? How did it become a bank? But that's the nature of this Jewish game we're playing.
Well, and the answer to your question is they used to have this Glass-Steagall Act, which separated banks from brokerages, So when they basically nix that, then you have, you know, the gamblers using their brokerages and this whole idea that they create these derivatives, which are mathematical formulas. I mean, it's so amazingly fraudulent when you actually start learning about these things. So that's when they had our corrupt Congress come in and say, yeah, just basically back out of Glass-Steagall, and now the banks can become one with the brokerages, and it's all the same thing. And then, of course, they're too big to fail. So when their gambling doesn't pay off, then we'll extort more money from the American citizens and make them whole while the Americans are starving.
Yeah, that brings us back to Thomas Woods, Ron Paul's advisor, one of the Austrians. As soon as I asked him a simple question, like one sentence, what about the lending of credit and what about debt-free currency, his immediate response was, you are evil and dishonest and a half-wit. Okay. And I said, well, why not lazy, too? Because he accused me of not reading all of these vaunted Austrian economists. Well, finally, I said, well, what difference does it make what I read? I mean, okay. I've read Hazlitt, Hayek, Friedman, Rothbard, von Mises. I was probably reading these guys when you were in short pants. Not only that, I was part of the Mike Oliver New Country program. Mike Oliver in Carson City sent me to British Honduras in 1971, to South Africa, and to Rhodesia to negotiate with those governments the minimum purchase of 100 square miles for the New Country project based on Mike Oliver's book, A New Constitution for a New Country. And he had 100,000 people in America, Canada, England, Australia who wanted to go get away from their taxing authorities and start a free port like what was in the Bahamas, someplace in the world. So Oliver sent me it was 1971. I was in my early 20s to negotiate with these governments. Well, that shut him up because that was kind of legendary deal. But he wouldn't back down from calling me evil, dishonest, and a half-wit. I said, well, okay. I've read more than probably, I've read all these guys, but they're bogus. They all depend. I said, you believe in a gold-backed currency. Where in the hell are you going to get the gold in this day and age? No answer. Anyway.
Well, I want to just highlight what you just said, because that's a very interesting, I was not aware of that, how you ended up in Rhodesia. The idea that you would go there to create a place where all this usury crap is not going to happen, and that he would deem that evil. I mean, he might as well put a Zionist, a tattoo on his forehead, in claiming that you're evil and all the rest of this stuff. I mean, that's what the whole world has to do. As you write in your document, these people have to be taken out. They are destroying the entire world, not only with their usury, but of course their mass depopulation efforts that are going on. And the good news, as I know that you know, is that people are waking up to this, because even though they have, called people like us, anti-Semitic and we're hate mongers and all the rest of it, hate speech, it's not working. Because as more and more people are investigating, especially Adolf Hitler, like you said, he actually was somebody who came up with a solution to what was going on with these monsters. And, all of history, his story, whose story is it? It's the writings of the victors in the fake wars funded by these monsters. And more people are actually starting to realize that they've been lied to about everything. And it's going to be funny how it all works out. That's why they're really upping the ante. 2012 is going to be a very interesting ride, because they know that there are spotlights on all of them and that their lies are not working anymore.
Yeah, I really recommend to your listeners that they watch this video. It's free online, called The Secret of Oz, O-Z, Oz. And it refers to the original book by Frank Baum called The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, which, you know, the movie was based on. But Bill Still does a wonderful job, I mean a fantastic job, of explaining how we can get out of our predicament by issuing debt-free currency. I can't say enough what he's done. So I would recommend that they watch The Secret of Oz. Now, Still and Ellen Brown, they don't talk about Germany because, again, you can't bring up Germany and the German economic miracle. Hitler was an international hero, you know, in the mid-1930s. He was on the cover of Time constantly. He was Man of the Year because he single-handedly brought Germany back to life virtually overnight. But, of course, they can't really cite that because of the Holocaust. So we got to simultaneously realize that the Holocaust is a giant hoax and a fraud and never happened. And then we can say what did happen was this German economic miracle. Now, Hitler required a very lengthy period of peace to consolidate the freedoms that he had and the liberty and the prosperity that he had brought to Germany. He needed peace, and he bent over backwards with England, with America, with Russia, or the Soviet Union, to have peace so his reforms could continue to work and to make life even better for everybody involved, not only the Germans, but anybody who wanted to be like that. Well, the bankers said no way. And, as soon as he came to power, the Jews declared war. And this criminal attorney in New York, Samuel Untermyer, took it upon himself to declare a Jewish war on Germany, an economic war. And he demanded boycotts and sanctions and starvation. He said, we'll bring the German people to their senses by starving them again, and they'll get rid of that Hitler. Well, the German people said, you go to hell. We like him. We like what he's doing for us. Well, that was unforgivable, and the Jews knew that they had to destroy Germany once and for all under the terms of the Morgenthau Plan for Germany. And we, you know, can discuss that at any time. But that's what happened. Germany had to be made an example that you will not break away from private central banking and interest payments. You will not, or you will suffer what Germany is suffering. And that's what happened.
And, of course, the American war machine made sure that that occurred. Okay, I'm getting a message that we have a number of callers that want to ask questions, but before we do, somebody asked a question in the chat room. They want to know, who owns the Rothschild?
Well, Rothschild. The family, you know, the Rothschild family owns Rothschild banks.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I just wanted to make that clear. We do have tops of the food chain, and there's nobody above Rothschild. I mean, basically, they are a very big, important part of this monstrous Zionist, whatever you want to call it, mass murder machine that's destroying the world and causing untold suffering. Okay,
yeah, they had their agents. They had their agents in this country. The first one, I think, was J.P. Morgan. He was a Rothschild agent. Now, when he died, people were stunned to find out that, you know, the richest man didn't have that much money. He was just an agent for the Rothschilds. Then John D. Rockefeller Sr. kind of took over that agency, and that's been the relationship in this country, the Rockefeller-Rothschild machine.
But let me just... front. Yeah, I just want to mention how important J.P. Morgan was, because he's the one that destroyed Tesla, and Tesla is the genius who actually came up with a way over a century ago to take the energy of the Earth, which could have supplied free electricity to the entire Earth, and he destroyed Tesla. So they have very important parts you know, it's not just the money changers aspect. It's the formation of big pharma, which is killing people. It's the destruction of Tesla technology, and actually the warping of it to create HARP, which is causing, you know, tsunamis and earthquakes and all kinds of terrible weather changes across the earth. There's many layers to their atrocities against humanity, and sure. That's what people have to face. Okay, all right, I'm getting a message. We have many people that want to chime in. They can call in at number 785-336-5190, or they can also Skype at PM Walk-In Turtle. So the board ops are going to change hats in the meantime, and then we're going to get some listeners that are chomping at the bit. They want to comment or ask you questions. So go ahead, board ops, do what you have to do. Okay, listeners, we're taking calls now, 785-336-5190, or you can Skype in at PM Walk-In Turtle. We have our first caller from area code 513. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, Dr. Carly, and hello, JB. JB, this is an outstanding show. This time I find absolutely not even a strand of anything I can seize upon and criticize. This is outstanding, I think, sir. I just wanted to witness or maybe point to a witness of what you talked about with Abraham Lincoln. Professor Thomas DiLorenzo wrote about Lincoln, said he was the first American tyrant. The book that he authored that elaborated on this was called The Real Lincoln. And so I thought that would be useful for the audience if they'd like to read about that. You said an analogy, JB, and Rebecca, Dr. Carly modified it a little bit. How did that go? It's like debt-free currency equals something?
Association of debt-free currency with mass murder is the Holocaust. That's the whole basis of the Holocaust, yes.
And also, further, just an ancillary analogy is the same thing like this. That is, the Zionists back then attacked Germany. They did not want Germany to have their ethno-state. So what they have converted that into is any white country that wants to be white, therefore is Nazi, and therefore will do Holocaust. Therefore, all white countries have multiculturalism, third world immigration, flooding into each and every country.
Yep. Yeah,
ahead,
disagree
JB.
With that. Yep.
Another thing I learned, JB, is that the fractional reserve system that we are weighed down with now is the same Jewish fractional reserve system they had back in the Babylonian times. That is called the Babylonian money system.
Absolutely.
And also one more thing, Dr. Carly. Germany and Japan both experienced miraculous economic growth outside of the Jewish money system, and that is what really tweaked them off. We were still mired in the economic depression here in America when Germany and Japan were flourishing, and then the Jews they try and turn that back on us and say the only reason we got out of that economic depression was because of wars. And then they blame us that we have that prosperity only through wars. And if you look at Germany and Japan, you saw that they prospered quite well without wars.
Yeah. You know, stop and think about the depression. All of a sudden, there was no money. That's because the Federal Reserve deflated the money supply, pulled back all the money, and raised the reserve requirements for lending. So there was no money throughout the 1930s. But as soon as Pearl Harbor happened, all of a sudden there was all the money in the world for ships and tanks and soldiers and uniforms and whatever. I mean, there was money. Where did money come from? How come there was no money in the 30s and all of a sudden there's money in the 40s? It's because the Federal Reserve deliberately starved us to death. Now,
yes,
some Russian researchers have recently looked at the depression in America, you know, the big legend was, well, as bad as it was, nobody starved. Well, that turns out not to be the truth. It turns out, according to these Russian researchers, we lost maybe 6, 7, 10 million people to starvation during the Depression, but it was covered up by the doctors and, you know, written off to natural causes or whatever. It's too bad. But we suffered terribly because of the Federal Reserve. And all of a sudden, when the time was right, we could go against Germany because the whole plan was to soften us up sufficiently so that we would go to war and kill Germany for real this time. And we were softened up by this Depression, so we'd be so grateful to have some money in our pockets, we'd do anything they told us to do. Like Audie Murphy. You know Audie Murphy. Here's a little poor kid from Texas who was so poor, he never had a pair of boots and never played a game in his life. He was so busy working as a little kid. Well, by the time he got into the Army, he said, I'll kill anybody you want, you know? And he killed 248 Germans and Italians. Anyway, that's the Federal Reserve. That's why I say it's the most ruthless, merciless organization on the face of this earth.
I don't dispute that at all. And I'd also say that the ones who brought down Germany are the same ones who are in charge here. And they're going to, when they're all done with us, we're going to be rent lower than Germany was after World War One.
That's right. We're already I have a good job now, and I had a good job a few years ago, but in between, I lost my job, and we became homeless. We were living in our car. That's how bad it can get in this country. Now we got 48 million people on food stamps, 48 million Americans on food stamps, and probably a lot more than that in real serious trouble. And it's just going
to get
worse.
And they'll do whatever the government says when the government says, do you want to keep eating?
Right.
Yep.
And in order to get your food stamps, you have to get your child inoculated with disease, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, they can withdraw those food stamps at any time. You know, they can say, oh, we can't afford this in our budget because, you know, we don't have the money. Of course, we don't have any money because the Federal Reserve has put us trillions of dollars into debt. But I just, and I recognize caller Bill. Thank you so much for calling, Bill. This whole term multiculturalism, I want to bring that up as well because, you know, that's one of the things that they talk about. The United States is a melting pot. Isn't that special? Why do they want a melting pot? So they can divide and conquer. You know, they let all these illegal immigrants in, and, of course, they have to be inoculated with disease. Their children are being killed and maimed by the vaccines, and they're being pitted as the enemy in many communities, especially in Long Island, where I lived for many years. So they encourage multiculturalism as a good thing, but then they use that to divide and conquer. You have to...
Is it that way?
Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, that is what they do, and by them doing that, they'll have us, all the different, you know, peoples here at each other's throats instead of at the source of the one that's caused all this pain in this world.
Exactly. Exactly. Well,
thank you for calling in, Bill.
And, yes. And,
Jamie, thank you, Austin. Want to call in.
Okay. Bill makes such an important point, well, many different important points. But that's why you talk about in your document, this means war. The fact that, as I've always said, we have to understand that our very language has been corrupted. The word understand, you know, implies that we're standing under and we're trying to figure out what's going on. No, if you overstand, you see the puppet masters, you see what's going on. And, of course, the puppet masters have the name Jew tattooed on their foreheads. And this is what we have to face, the fact of what's going on. And I just want to encourage you to mention any other things that you have to mention. In terms of the Federal Reserve, for example, how do we get rid of this? I mean, we could eliminate our, what is it, $14 trillion worth of debt we have now in this country in a heartbeat. We could just say, guess what, Federal Reserve? We take back your right to charge interest for the money that you've created out of thin air. But how do do we do that? Because the powers that be, they all have sold out to these monsters.
Well, there's no peaceful way to do this. Now, number one, as you say, the debt is fake. It has to be repudiated as fake. So we don't owe anybody anything. Any private lender like Goldman Sachs or any of these brokerage firms that have, you know, people don't understand how currency is created in this country by the selling of bonds on Wall Street. They buy the bonds, and that gives them a right to print so much, or used to. I mean, there's not any rules anymore. It's all just entries on the computer. I mean, nothing is even as fraudulent as it used to be. It's 1,000 times more fraudulent now. So the debt is totally fake. It's not owed to anybody real. And we just repudiate the debt and start over. But the 12 member banks, the actual buildings of the Federal Reserve, you know, the only one that counts is the one in New York, the Federal Reserve of New York. That's the real Federal Reserve. The other ones are just fake fronts. They mean nothing. But they all have to be either destroyed physically or turned into museums of fraud, something like that. You know, they're just like mausoleums.
Right.
Anyway.
And that's why we have to wake up the Ron Paul supporters. He wants to audit the Fed. Excuse me. We don't need to audit the Fed. We need to basically turn them into mausoleums, as you said. It's a total scam. And this brings up the whole concept of the CAFRs. Maybe you would want to comment on that a little bit. Because the idea that we're in debt, that's a fraud to begin with. Everything is incorporated, including the United States government. They have lots of money. That's how they run their black op projects.
Yeah. Like I said, the savings and loan deal was revealed to be a CIA black ops funding scam. And it finally collapsed. And, you know, everything is a total hoax and scam. So we just have to start over. And it must become illegal for the government to borrow money. There's no reason on earth for, as Hitler proved in the 1930s, there is no reason on earth for a government to borrow money from Jews or from non-Jews. But, I mean, the Jews are always the ones to lend the money to the governments. It's always the Rothschilds, the Kuhnlobes, you know, various Rothschild agencies who lend the money to the government. Well, that's a fraud. There's no reason for the government to borrow. The government can issue its own currency. As Henry Ford said, if the government can issue a bond, and that's how we get currency, because the government issues a bond, and then it's converted into currency. But we have to pay interest on the currency to this bunch of gangsters called the Federal Reserve. He said if the government can issue a bond, it can issue a dollar bill. It's the same thing. What makes the bond any more valuable or different than currency? See, we just have to change our thinking. And just emulate what Hitler did in every way. You know, we need to emulate Hitler. This is the fact of life. Hitler was right about virtually everything he did. Now, he may have tried to re-educate the Jews in Theresienstadt and some other camps and teach them how to work. You know, he was trying to teach them about labor and how to act, because Jews are allergic to labor. They don't believe in working. They believe other people should do the work, and they should get the benefit. Well,
okay. Wait, I have to interrupt you. Just to encourage the listeners, go online, type in The Eternal Jew. You need to watch that documentary. It's just outstanding in terms of what Bruce is saying, that they're parasites. And as I always say, if you have a parasite in your GI system, are you going to forgive it? Are you going to save it? Are you going to do whatever you can to allow it to continue to parasitize as you know, it's got to be taken out. And that's very important. And I just want to put out a very novel idea that we have to make fraud and corruption illegal. Because, in fact, as we now know, as these cases I've discussed, especially where the U.S. Justice Department has affirmed the right to lie about, you know, service in the military, which is fraud in itself. Yes, I will kill others as long as you give me a purple heart or whatever. And, of course, you know, the Justice Department's not going to prosecute their own head wrongdoer for contempt. We have to make the idea that bad doing is prosecutable. And what we have now in our country is that all these Jewish lawyers and their Talmudic ideas are allowing fraud, corruption, crimes against humanity. It's all okay because they've found a way to make it so. And that's our biggest problem. They're killing us. They're creating biological weapons that are destroying our health, not just of us, the people, our pets, our food source through GMO, all of these different things. That's legal. And how do we reverse that? That's like so massive. How do we do that?
Now, the one we were talking about Kennedy earlier, the one great thing, a really great thing that Jack Kennedy did in April of 1963, in his last year on this earth, he ordered the issuance of over $4 billion in U.S. notes, not Federal Reserve notes. U.S. notes are essentially greenback things that Lincoln did and what Hitler did. And he authorized this printing. I've got one right staring me right in the face right here. Series 1963, U.S. notes, United States notes. No interest is paid on them. They are issued debt-free. And he did that. And it that may have gotten him killed. I mean, he did a bunch of things that may have gotten him killed. Well, that was definitely one of them. But he showed that we can have debt-free currency because those would have driven the Federal Reserve notes into retirement. Nobody would have there was no need for Federal Reserve notes on which interest is paid to a bunch of conniving Jew bankers when you can have debt-free currency issued by the Treasury Department, which he did. And that's what we can easily do immediately, right now. And that will essentially solve our financial problems virtually overnight.
Well, in the meantime, we can also use bartering. Although one of the problems of bartering is who's going to set the standard as to, you know, what is the negotiable aspect of bartering. You know, if I'm going to give you a consult to teach you how to reverse your disease, what's that worth in terms of you giving me a new roof? You know, that's a problem with bartering. But we are getting a question. Somebody's asking, is that the silver certificate, what you're talking about with Kennedy?
No, that was another currency that he issued, and there's a lot of confusion about that. Even the spotlight is in heavy denial. They try to say it was all silver certificates. No, I got one right here. It says United States note. It doesn't say anything about silver on it. It just says this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. And up at the top it says Federal Reserve note. It says United States note. So, no, silver certificates were a different matter, and he did issue them as well at the same time. And they were retired. But the United States note, this is the important debt-free currency. There's nothing to do with metals. It has no gold behind it. It has no silver behind it. It has nothing behind it except the United States government. And that's good enough. That's the one legitimate function of government. I'm an anarchist. I hate government. But we have to have a medium of exchange. We can't depend on barter. It's too tricky, as you just said. You know, how do we do that? Sometimes it works out okay. Countries can do it. They can trade wheat for guns or whatever. But the people have to have a medium, a reliable medium of exchange in terms of currency. And that's the government's one legitimate function, to provide this solid, dependable medium of exchange, the currency, and it has to be debt free.
Yes, and that was wasn't that one of Congress's elucidated functions was to basically provide for currency. Maybe you could explain to the listeners, how was that annihilated by the Jews and turned over to the Federal Reserve?
Well, from the very beginning of our country, there was this conflict. We had the Rothschilds, agents such as Alexander Hamilton and George Washington, setting up the first bank of the U.S. And I just wrote about it in that piece. I gave the dates and everything, you know, from the very beginning. 1791 started the first bank of the United States. Well, it wasn't the bank of the, it was a Rothschild bank. It was privately owned 80% by the Bank of England. We just fought a revolution against England, and all of a sudden, we're under a private, privately owned scam, the Rothschild scam. They own the Bank of England. That's a private deal, too. 80% of our new Bank of the United States was owned by the Bank of England, and it had a 20-year charter. Okay. Well, at the end of that, in 1811, it ran out, and there was some hesitancy and resistance to giving them another charter, the second bank of the U.S. Well, all of a sudden in 1812, because we were stalling around, not really wanting to do this again, we were at war with England again in the War of 1812. Some people say there was a real connection there, that they were you know, forcing us to have the Rothschilds in charge of our banking again. And by 1817, we did. And they started the second bank of the U.S., again, privately Rothschild-owned, and it had another 20-year charter. Well, by 1836, Andrew Jackson was president, and even though he was a Mason, he hated the banks. He hated them with a deadly passion, and he swore to destroy them. And he removed their assets. He removed all the money from the second bank of the U.S. and put it into private banks and state banks around the country. And that destroyed the Second Bank of the U.S. and destroyed the Rothschild monopoly on our money for 77 years until 1913. So that's our history. Our, from the very beginning, we've had a privatized, privately owned bank issuing our money. The first guy to go against it was Lincoln for his own nasty purposes. The second one was Jack Kennedy for I think, very good purposes. He declared war on the Federal Reserve. And lost. But, you know, it's got to be tried. You got to do it. That's the way out of this misery is what he did.
Exactly. Okay, we're running out of time. Before we get to the end of the show, and I'll let you make any closing comments you want, I just want to mention a obituary that was in my Charlotte Observer in here in North Carolina today on page 28. Yitzhak Shamir, past Israeli leader, dies at 96. The former prime minister believed in patience over compromise to get his way. And this is what it says. He died yesterday at 96, born in Poland, survivor of a family wiped out in the Holocaust. So right there, fraud. He was part of a group of right-wing Israeli politicians led by Menachem Begin, who rose to power in the 70s as the more left-wing Labor Party declined. Stubborn and iconic, Shamir was, by his own assessment, a most unlikely political leader whose very personality seemed the perfect representation of his government's policy of patient, determined, unyielding opposition to territorial concessions. In the 1940s, he sent Jewish fighters out to kill British officers he saw as occupiers and showed himself in public only at night, disguised as a Hasidic rabbi. To him, victory came not from compromise, but from strength, patience, and cunning. As prime minister, he actively promoted continued Jewish settlement in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, and while he was in office, the Jewish population in the occupied territories increased by nearly 30%. And so basically, we have a monster, going to wherever monsters go. But I just love this because, you know, in my local paper, you know, the propaganda continues. You know, he's claiming he is a survivor of a family wiped out in the Hollow Hoax, and he uses words like cunning. You know, victory comes from cunning. And this is very important, and it gets to the whole document that you wrote, This Means War, because these are the kinds of psychopaths that we're dealing with. So please do. Okay, wait, hold on. We are getting some questions. What sort of charter does the Fed have? Somebody wants to know.
Well, it has a license to print our money. It's a private organization, a private profit-making corporation. There's a decision from 1982 called Lewis versus United States. See, Lewis got hit by a truck owned by the Federal Reserve. So he sued the federal government. Say, hey, I got hurt. You know, feds ought to pay me. So the federal court said, well, no. Actually, the Federal Reserve is a private profit-making corporation and not connected to the federal government. So you have no case, Mr. Lewis. So that was the actual federal courts admitting that this is a private profit-making corporation and not part of the federal government. Just because it has the word federal on it, it's like Federal Express or Federal Tire Company, Federal Ammunition Company. It's just a name. It's a scam.
Exactly. Okay.
The charter runs forever until we destroy the Federal Reserve and we have to kill all of the members of the Federal Reserve because they are the most ruthless bastards on the face of this earth. They want to take everything we have. They will steal everything we have until we're dead. Yeah. That's their nature.
Yeah, scorpions, exactly. Okay, and then we're getting another question asking, have you seen all the FEMA camps and coffins?
Yes, I have. I've seen all that stuff, yeah.
Okay, and so how do we deal with this? Because, of course, as you state in your excellent document, the military and the police, they've sold out. They have a way to weed out the psychopaths. Those are the ones that are put in control of these organizations. And so, you know, and I actually got a call this week from a woman who retired from the Air Force because she realized she was being targeted. She started accessing some information, especially about the weaponized rabies on her Air Force computer. And she called me and told me about different conversations she had had with military on the base that she works at. And they basically told her, yeah, if we're ordered to kill Americans, we'll do it. Whether they sold out, whether they're microchipped, whether they're vaccine damaged, whatever the case may be. What do we do? Because, see, this is a problem. These are the people that took an oath to protect us from enemies from within. Obviously, the enemies are within. And these are the people that are now going to put us in FEMA camps. So, you know, people are, you know, confused. What do we do? I know what you say. They have to be taken out. And frankly, I agree with you. But you have to wait for a situation to develop for you to go on the offensive once they threatened you, such as if they're breaking down your door, a SWAT team. And interestingly, in Indiana, I sent you this link, they actually passed a law where citizens can kill police officers that are breaking down their doors.
I got the same law here in my house.
Yeah, these are terrorists. They're terrorists, okay? I agree with you. We don't need a law. If somebody breaks down my door, I'm sitting here. Yeah, I'm a little radical. I'm on the air. I'm talking about the criminals that control the world. But basically, we have to protect ourselves. This is like an inherent behavior that we've been ingrained with to protect ourselves, protect our family, protect our property, protect our pets, protect everything. We don't need a law. I'm so glad you said that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. We're on notice. You know, they intend to kill us for any reason or for no reason at all. So, fine. I mean, that's to be expected, you know, by these people. Well, you just have to expect that and stop being in denial. Oh, do they really mean that? Yeah, they mean it. They definitely mean it. They're going to kill us. So, I mean, this is America. We got all the guns in the world. We got all the guns we need. We've got the means to protect ourselves. We have the will. That's the question. And I'm, my purpose in life is to free up our thinking into an easy acceptance of reality. We got to, you know, deal with reality, not with dreams and everything. We got to deal with reality. And that is, we got some nasty people paid by taxes who intend to kill us, either slowly or quickly. But that's their thing. They got a license to kill. So we got a license to defend ourselves. It's called self-defense. We got the means. So my only purpose here is to free up our thinking and be ready to defend you and your loved ones and your friends and your pets and your car and everything else, anything that's yours. Defend it from these criminals, because they got the license to kill. You see this with cops. You know, cops have a license to kill for any reason or for no reason. They get away with it.
Oh, yeah.
Every time. They always get away with it. Okay. I can deal with that. We can get away with it, too. Just kill them.
Exactly.
Kill them all. They're all parasites. They're all tax-paid parasites. We pay for everything they've got. Everything they've got is comes from our pockets. Their guns, their cars, their uniforms, their pensions, everything is paid for by us. We're the boss. Boss doesn't like what he sees. He makes changes. And that's what we got to start doing.
Right. We're paying for our own destruction. And this is so important, what you're saying, and this is my mantra also, is that, you know, if you know the enemy is in your midst, what are you supposed to do? Well, the Christians will tell you, you're supposed to turn the other cheek. You're supposed to love your predator. I'm sorry. That's not going to happen. You have to go against those who are causing all of this destruction. It's pure evil. Psychopaths versus people of conscience. That's the basic war that we're in, a war of good versus evil. And as you talk about in your document, how the Christians have been co-opted, you say on page 3, Christianity makes the world safer for Jews. That's their purpose.
It's always been their purpose. And we have to face that. Christianity is mind control. It's a form of Judaism for Gentiles. It drives us crazy. It makes us irrational. It's a cancer of the intellect. It has to be cured. So, you know, that's my purpose in life.
Well, and it's my purpose as well. And also, just to make people realize that they have to develop a filter to separate the people of conscience from the psychopaths. And the psychopaths are very easy to identify. All you have to look at is the fruits of their labors. And once you realize that we have psychopaths controlling the world, especially this government, I mean, and we're now going into the 4th of July. That's why I wanted to do the Anti-Psychopath Weekend with you and John Kaminsky. As all of you flag wavers are out there, why don't you research the evil empire? Whose flag that you are flying? Okay? I got a real problem with this. And as all these wars, you know, the Arab Spring, which is obviously an NSA, CIA-driven phenomena, they want to take out all the Muslim leaders who are against usury and replace them with their puppets, and now we're getting ready to go into Syria. We see it on the mainstream media 24/7. Oh, the Syrians are killing their own people. Well, guess what, folks? The United States government, through the Special Virus Cancer Program, through 1,300 biological weapons facilities in this country alone, are making diseases to kill you. How come you're not outraged about that? This drives me crazy. They don't want to face this fact.
Well, it's a hard fact. It's a hard truth when you realize your own government is out to destroy you. It's as if you find out your parents are trying to kill you. I mean, it's a horrible concept, but it is the way it is. So we have to accept the truth, deal with it. Very simple.
Exactly. And we're almost out of time. I want to thank you so much, Bruce, for your excellent contribution. Bruce is going to be on my show every month. We'll have to, you know, work out the dates based on his schedule. But I just want to ask you, we have a couple of minutes left. Anything else you want to share with the listeners besides the fact that they need to keep on your excellent blog, jbcampbellextremismonline.com, and read the essays that you come up with? I know that you're not in the militia, you know, a mindset anymore. You're doing a resistance because of the false flag operations that the government has put up against any organized groups. We have to do this as individuals. We have to protect ourselves. We have to educate our neighbors and our loved ones. We have to stand up where we need to stand up. But any closing comments that you have for the listeners would be greatly appreciated.
Well, I'm kind of one note, Charlie. I mean, the idea is, if you recognize a threat to you, and there's criminals and there's cops and there's soldiers. Criminals generally just want your money. You don't really have to shoot them. You can produce a gun and they'll probably go away. You might have to shoot them. But the ones that are dangerous are these government killers, the cops and soldiers we're going to be facing in the future, maybe facing right now, maybe today, maybe tomorrow. But you have to be ready to defend yourself with deadly force against these government killers, because they have no conscience and they will get you if you don't fight.
And what you know, I try to look at I hear your attack cat in the background. I'm laughing. As I look at, there's such a thing as divine justice. These killers, be they working for the military or the police, of course, they're getting vaccinated. They're getting sprayed with chemtrails. Their children are as well. So they're selling their souls to put a paycheck in their bank account so they can put food on the table so that they can actually contribute to the destruction of the human race. And I encourage all of them listening, because I'm sure the CSA, the CIA, NSA, and all the rest of them are listening, to consider this fact, that you are actually working for evil and the psychopaths that are destroying the planet. And maybe you have to ask yourself some hard questions as you learn about these things.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for what you're doing, and your wife, Robbie, for all she's doing, another doctor that's been persecuted for telling the truth. And Bruce will be on again next month. And stay tuned, folks, if you have the backbone to learn the truth. Bye-bye.